Now to tonight's topic, the universal perspective of the Mahayana. What do we mean by Mahayana? Mahayana is a Sanskrit word. It consists of two parts, Maha and Yana. Maha means great. Yana means way. It also means vehicle. So Mahayana means the great way or the great vehicle. And it's the great way or the great vehicle to enlightenment. Now, if you've read a little about Buddhism, if you've read books on Buddhism or articles on Buddhism, you might have got the impression that by the Mahayana, the great way or the great vehicle, was meant a particular sect or a particular school of Buddhism. Some writers even refer to the Mahayana school or the Mahayana sect. But this is not really correct, as we shall see. The Mahayana isn't a sect or school, as those terms are usually employed. We know that what we nowadays call Buddhism, but which in Buddhist countries is called the Dharma, we know that what we call Buddhism started in India, some 2,500 years ago. The Buddha himself, Gautama the Buddha, Shakyamuni, was born and brought up in what is now southern Nepal, just over the border from India. But he travelled and taught after his enlightenment, and for some time before even, he travelled and taught in what was known in those days to him and his disciples as the Majjhima Patipada, that is to say, the middle country or the middle region, a region comprising the two present-day Indian states of Bihar and the Uttar Pradesh, an area roughly equivalent to England and Wales. And after the Buddha's death, after what Buddhists call the parinirvana of the Buddha, Buddhism, the Dharma, lasted in India for about 1,500 years. And during that period it spread from the middle country, from northeastern India, where it began, it spread all over the country, or rather over the whole vast subcontinent. In fact, not only that, crossing deserts and crossing seas, it spread, it penetrated over practically the whole of Asia. It even penetrated into the West, penetrated as far as Antioch and Alexandria. And this, of course, was long, long before the days of modern transport. Now, in India, during the 1,500 years of its existence there, its development there, Buddhism underwent many changes. Not changes of essence, not changes as regards fundamental things, but changes of aspect, of appearance, of presentation, of interpretation. It passed, we may say, through three great phases of development, historical development, each lasting roughly 500 years. First, there's the phase or the stage of the Hinayana. Secondly, the phase or the stage of the Mahayana. And thirdly, the phase or the stage of the Vajrayana. Now we've seen that Mahayana means great way or great vehicle. But what do the other terms mean? Hinayana means little way, and Vajrayana means diamond way or adamantine way. Now at present we're not concerned with the Vajrayana, the diamond way or the adamantine way. We're concerned only with the Hinayana and the Mahayana, that is to say, with the little way to enlightenment and the great way to enlightenment. Now just consider these terms, great way, little way. Now obviously a contrast is intended by whosoever was responsible for coining these terms. A contrast between the little way and the great way, or the great way and the little way. So the question arises, in what does this contrast consist? How do they differ from each other? Now there are many ways of explaining this and looking at this, and it's often said that according to the Hinayana, the little way to enlightenment, one should devote oneself simply to the attainment of one's own individual enlightenment without bothering about anybody else, ignoring as it were the needs of other beings. Whereas, it is said, according to the Mahayana, one should, on the contrary, forget all about oneself and help other beings to gain enlightenment, to tread the path leading to enlightenment. So it's in these terms, or terms of this sort, that the contrast between the Hinayana and the Mahayana, the little way and the great way to enlightenment, is usually presented in many books and articles. But this is much too crude. It can also be very, very misleading. It's much more correct to say, it's much more true to say, that the Mahayana realizes, and realizes very deeply, very profoundly, that concern for the well-being, the welfare, for the development, the spiritual development, of other people is an integral part of one's own spiritual development itself. The Mahayana realizes this, has as it were insight into this. It sees as it were that to be concerned with one's own development, one's own spiritual development, to the exclusion of interest in that of other people, is in the long run self-defeating. The Mahayana realizes, as it were, that all forms of life in the universe, on all levels, and perhaps above all on the human level, are interrelated, that they all mutually interact, again, just like Indra's jewel net. Not only that, we can go a step further. We can say that the Mahayana realizes that the net is not, as it were, static. The net is in motion. Or rather, the individual jewels that make up the net are in motion. They are, as it were, all travelling on the same road, all heading in the same direction. Some jewels, admittedly, are a little further ahead than the others. Some are lagging rather far behind, because the net is, after all, a big one and very extensive. Admittedly, some jewels are bigger and brighter than others. Some are smaller and less lustrous, and we can even say that some jewels, unfortunately, are dragging in the dirt, in the mud, seem to have lost all their beauty, and look more like ordinary stones, ordinary pebbles, than jewels. But nevertheless, they're all treading, as it were, the same path, all travelling towards the same goal, and they're all directly or indirectly in contact with one another. Now this great realization of the Mahayana is embodied in what it calls the Bodhisattva ideal. And the Bodhisattva ideal is the highest spiritual ideal, the supreme ideal of the Mahayana. The highest spiritual ideal of the Hinayana is that of the Arahant, the sage or the saint who has destroyed all passions, who has reached Nirvana for himself, but who does not concern himself at any stage of his career with other beings. Now, what does this word bodhisattva mean? Bodhi means enlightenment. It means awakening to the truth, awakening to reality. And sattva means being, in the sense of an individual being, a creature. A bodhisattva, therefore, is a being, an individual, a person, who has dedicated himself to the attainment of bodhi or enlightenment, but he has dedicated himself to it not for his own sake merely, but for the benefit of all living beings whatsoever. To make this clearer, we may say that the urge to enlightenment, the urge, as it were, to something above and beyond the world, is imminent in all creation, but it is a blind urge. It's like the urge of the plant which is groping for the light. But the bodhisattva, we may say, is one in whom this urge, this aspiration, if you like, of the whole creation has become conscious, has become self-conscious. And it's for this reason that, as we've seen in previous lectures, the bodhisattva may be spoken of as the embodiment of the higher evolution. We can, of course, also say that the urge to enlightenment has become self-conscious in the arahant, the ideal man of the Hinayana, but in his case there seems to be a limitation. He does not realize that what is actual in him, or what has become actual in him, is potential in all. And because he doesn't see that, doesn't realize that, he doesn't have the same sense of solidarity with all other forms of life. But the bodhisattva does have this. He does realize this. He feels his solidarity with all other forms of life. So he cannot think in terms of his own individual enlightenment, salvation, excluding, or at least ignoring, everybody else.